Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
I have a very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute.
Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, everybody. Tim Cavalcami here, 49ers Plus Minus. Sunday afternoon, after a 49ers victory to go 2-0, they win 26-21. In New Orleans, kind of a, I call it like a nervy game. It was kind of a, they were a better team, but they might blow it. They're holding on. They're okay. Matt Barros of The Athletic, what's your headline out of that very interesting game, two road games, they get through it with Mac Jones. Where are your thoughts on the 49ers right now?
Well, they're not going to rush Brock Purdy back from an injury after that performance. I thought it was a really good performance from Mac Jones. I mean, not flawless. I think that there were some nerves early. He seemed to be overthrowing the ball, too much air under the ball on some of those early misses. But, you know, once he sort of calmed down and once he got into a rhythm, he looked good. He's got a little bit better arm than Brock Purdy does. He doesn't have Purdy's wheels. So, you know, he's going to be in that pocket. And that's what the Saints were counting on. And that nearly led to a game-changing, certainly was momentum-changing turnover to begin the third quarter. That's what allowed the Saints to get back into the game. And as you say, turn this game, which should have been probably a blowout, into a more nervy game. But, you know, two road wins to begin the season. You talked about this in the run-up to the game. If you can survive all these injuries and get some wins early in the season when six of your first nine games are on the road, you're putting yourself in a really good position down that home stretch, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, these were not the two toughest games. Seattle's a tough game. Seattle wins today. But they were winnable. They were on the road. They were artificial surface. They get all these things we know we talk about. And to get through them in any way you do it, 2-0, especially when you don't have your quarterback for the second one, is something. And I think they feel that way just from the way they were talking. They sounded that way. You and I were not in New Orleans, but we were watching, I'm sure, the post game, and Shanahan looked pretty happy after this one. And I know he's happy when he's praising the punter twice. And you saw him on the sideline. They cut to him after the second punt, and Shanahan's like dapping him up. He's like, yeah, Morstead, way to go. Like that is one, Kyle Shanahan acknowledging something that's very important. Morstead getting those two punts inside, one at the 11, I think one in the six, were very big. And I even had to look up after the one at the 11. Like, did he just get him at the 11? I don't remember Wisnowski doing that a lot last few years.
Not last year.
Yeah. I mean, I know he was a good guy and he was a good 49er for years, but he wasn't very good last year. And Morstead is getting those, you know, not long punts, but I just don't remember teams being stuck at their five very much with the 49ers.
And 23, and that happened quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, that was part of their game plan, really. You know, allow that defense to tee off on a team when they're stuck inside their own 10.
Yeah, I don't remember it last year. Maybe it's just my short attention span. But also, I think Shanahan was in a good mood because, again, they're giving themselves breathing room. They're giving, you know, winning without Brock Purdy. They know he'll be back at some point soon. Mac Jones is a guy that Kyle liked. Obviously, we can talk about that. has arm talent. He is so unathletic. Barrows, Purdy should put that tape up there of Mac Jones running around and go, see what I can do. But he survived it. I think Chase Young not being out there for the Saints was a big deal. Nobody really out there to chase him down. They had guys buzzing around him, but nothing spectacular. The Saints defense is not very good, but Mac made some throws. Like, he made some throws. I think that's why Kyle liked him. But I guess I'll say it. The thought of him being the number three overall pick, like Shanahan almost did, with that unathletic profile would have been astounding. And that's what I thought back then even. Like, you could love him for whatever checks and throws he can make, but you can't draft a guy number three overall who cannot move. And Mac Jones really cannot move in an NFL style. He can move a little bit, but not – he's just not athletic. He's not bouncy. And Brock Purdy is. But that's me being negative. Let's get into more positive. What other real positive signs do you have from this one, Barrows?
Well, we correctly predicted, I think we predicted this, that Kendrick Bourne would play a lot. And, yeah. You know, he was not perfect. There were a couple of plays where it was quite clear that he didn't know where to line up, which is what you would expect when a guy is signed 5 days earlier. But once Kyle Juszczyk went out, they really had to lean on their 11 personnel, three wide receiver personnel packages. And that third wide receiver, most of the time, was Kendrick Bourne. And three passes went his way. This is the week after zero passes went to Sky Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Russell Gage. Kendrick Bourne got three. He caught all three for 32 yards. So I think that needs to be noted. And I thought it was a really good game. And I think people, this will be sort of the Monday, Tuesday story for Mykel Williams. You know, great game from Nick Bosa. Great game from Fred Warner. Another great game from D. Winters, although he had some Dre Green plays in there.
Yes, he did.
But the unexpected guy was Mykel Williams, who was getting a really good push on his opponent. Not going to be a guy who dips his shoulder and comes in and gets a run.
Not an outside guy. Yeah.
He's not an outside guy. But when he is on the edge, he caves in that pocket. And he did that a couple of times, and he played the run really well. I know it's not perfect still. There are a couple that maybe they got outside of him. But if he makes a jump from week one to week two, you know, progressively throughout the season, he's going to be really good this year. But your guy, Alfred Collins, showed up. He had a quarterback hit. I like to see his snap count, see how different it was than last week. But he showed up as well. He was noticeable, which we haven't been able to say to this point about him very much. So the defensive line played well. I think they picked on Upton Stout again. I think that's going to be a game plan. Whenever you have a rookie nickel in there, it's a tough position for anybody to play, veteran, whatever. But it's especially tough for a rookie. So that's something that these teams are seeing on tape, and they're taking advantage of it.
Two things. I got to mention Bryce Huff closing it out with a sack fumble. Incredible pass rush. My God, that was like an AstroTurf, dig your feet in, and then just kind of bend your body and just run around the tackle, right around him, right into Rattler. There was pressure all around, but he just happened to get to him first. And he had a good game. He had no tackles, nothing last week, zero across the board. Thought he wasn't terrible, but he just didn't register on stat sheet. Four tackles today, including the sack fumble to close the game, was a real force. They needed it. And secondly, did you know, I think Jair Brown was playing some strong side linebacker at Barrows. Whatever that three safety look is, he's essentially replacing the strong side linebacker and was making some plays. Now, you were lighter that way. If teams try to line up and, you know, get you knocked around, obviously he's certainly not a big linebacker if he's playing linebacker, but I get it. They want somebody who has got a little more speed there for a linebacker. They don't have a perfect strong side linebacker. D. Winters was that guy, you know, could have been that guy before he becomes a weak side linebacker. So, you know, Luke Gifford has some skills, but isn't going to be a guy that you want in coverage at all. Curtis Robinson, special teams guy, not a guy you really want to cover. I think they're playing Jair. Now, I don't know if they're going to admit it or whatever they're going to say. He's essentially playing strong side linebacker. at least three or four times, and he was making plays. And I thought that was, he makes a play on the ball in the air. I just thought that was an interesting little tweak.
Yeah, it's, that would be a good niche for him if he's not going to be, you know, a true safety for you. It's something the 49ers have fooled around with in the past. Remember Eric Reed, big safety that they took in the first round. They tried to convert him literally into a linebacker later in his career. It didn't ever take, but you know, that's something that you do against teams like this on turf. Lots of three wide receivers. They've got a running back, Alvin Kamara, that really good in coverage. You would think, though, that, you know, having a linebacking core of Fred Warner, D. Winters, and Nick Martin would be a good catch-all for everything. Nick Martin can fly around the field. I just don't know how much strong side linebacker he's been playing.
Yeah.
He was an active, healthy scratch for this game as well. I thought he might be up because I thought Curtis Robinson would not be elevated from the practice squad. Instead, Curtis Robinson was promoted to the active roster, which means that it's a permanent promotion, not a one-game promotion like in week one. So they didn't need to bring Nick Martin up. I don't think that there's a big difference between that weak side spot where Martin has been playing all summer long, all spring and summer, and the strong side spot. But I guess there's enough difference that the 49ers aren't real confident in him at the strong side spot. And the fact that Luke Gifford is good on special teams, I think that kind of seals it. And then Tatum Bethune had a nice special teams play today. So I don't see the 49ers kind of tinkering with that when not everything on special teams has been going very well. This is a great segue into the Tim Kawakami specialist, which is looking very closely at body language and motion and kind of reading the atmosphere of these field goal attempts. And I got to say, I'll let you go nuts on this topic, but it seemed pretty kind of casual almost, the way that those field goals at least happened.
Eddie Pinheiro, the new kicker, obviously replacing Jake Moody. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be going much nuts on this anymore because it did look very calm. It looked, and, you know, I thought after he missed the extra point, which was not a good strike of the ball, just pushed it right, that maybe Shanahan was shy away from that field goal. He did. He gave, like, very quickly after that. It's like 44-yarder. Sent him right out there. It was like fourth and two, so he could have gone for it. And I think Darryl Johnson made a point, like, you're kind of shying away from it with Jake Moody, which is the question I asked Shanahan after the game, of course, and he denied it. But you clearly were not sending Moody out to kick that field goal. You sent Pinheiro out after he misses the field, after he missed the extra point, and, man, it looked just – you notice that? The ball did not move. It just went right to the middle and did not move. That is the Moody thing, is he hits them hard, but they all move. So you have to, like – give a little leeway for it because it's going to move across the way. And Pinheiro's did not look like that. You know whose they look like? Robbie Gould. Yeah, Robbie Gould ball goes up and it's right in the middle and that stays there. It doesn't waver. And I think Kyle really likes that. And I even noted it on Twitter. Like, he's going to like this kicker because, okay, from 52 – like Robbie Gould, that's like the extent of it. And we know we see kickers kicking from 62 all the time in the league now, but they don't really want that. They want the guy from 45, 47 in. You're just going to feel like the ball isn't moving. And if he misses, there's just going to be something weird happening. With Jake Moody, it just, at any time, the ball could move in the wrong direction. You just do not get that from Eddie Pinheiro. And again, I just think that is the kind of kicker that Kyle Shanahan wants. Send him out there as he's making it. Now, the extra points might be a whole, we might have some weird thing with extra points, but I just think the 44-yarder he made, the 46-yarder he made after that were just the kinds of calm. This guy is going to start the ball on the right thing, and the ball's not going to take some wild turn left or wild turn right. And we just saw that too often, and I'm sure Kyle Shanahan has saw it too often with Jake Moody. Now, I don't know about him kicking into the end zone. Again, that's a Moody thing, and I criticize Moody for it. And Kyle did not look pleased after the second one that Pinheiro did. It's just like that maybe they have to kind of figure out how to kick in these domes. It's different than kicking outside. The ball was like flying 6 yards into the end zone, and that's a mistake because they return. Even the crappy 49ers kickoff coverage should be able to hold somebody in front of the 35. You cannot just give the team the ball at 35. They had that one, I think, it went in the end zone. They started 35, personal foul. They're at the 50. Like that, you can't have that. So that's something they have to work on. But I just think Pinero is going to be a guy. We're not talking.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Very much on the podcast. It's going to steal a topic from us, Barrows, because I think he's just a very calm, very confident. You just know you sent him out for a 39-yarder to win in Cleveland. It's going to go right down the middle. I haven't felt that about a 49er kicker maybe since Akers. Akers was – when he was good, it was right down the middle. You just never saw the – oh, is it going to sneak in? And that was Jake Moody, I think, his entire career basically.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about the kickoffs because there was a kickoff in the – maybe it was in the second quarter or third quarter that went deep into the end zone.
Yeah.
Like that couldn't have been a mistake. He had to be trying for it. So I don't know whether they just said, okay, for this game, just boot him as deep as you can. We'll live with the 35 because I don't know whether the – it's a question for Shanahan tomorrow.
Yeah, you can't be. You just can't be saying, "Here, go ahead, start at 35."
Yeah, it was too purposeful though. Like, I think he's trying to hit it to the one.
I think it's one of those you're trying to hit it to the one, and you hit it so good that you hit it just indoors. I can see that happening. That's my. You just can't just say start at 35. That's a fail in the NFL. So I would be very surprised if that was okay with Shan. You know, the Saints guy, who's not a great kicker, we saw him miss the first field goal try. He was kicking him in the end zone a couple times too.
Yeah.
So I think there was something going on there. We've been in there. It's a little drafty in that stadium. Yeah, so maybe, especially in the press box, if you know where the press box is, maybe there was some problems there because, again, even if you're crappy kickoff coverage team, you're tackling them at the 30, not at the 35. And it's just every special teams coach I know would never, never say just start at the 35. So there had to be some issues there. But otherwise, yeah, I just thought a real solid kicker. Just that's why they got this guy. 44-yarder, boom, it's never a question. We'll see on the kickoffs in the future. And Morstead, but it just all of a sudden Pinero and Morstead, who knew that was going to be the confidence-building kicker-punter combo. But I thought they both were just solid veterans that Shanahan doesn't have to worry about. That's the whole thing with him. He doesn't want to worry about it. He's had to worry about Moody for years. He had to worry about Wisnowski last year. He might have two guys that are just solid, at least for the rest of this year.
Yeah. What do you think of, I don't know if you read this, but I wrote about this last week. It was noted that all of these games hinge on these kickers. And, you know, some of these teams use a high draft pick on these young kickers. And hardly any team has a assistant coach or, you know, special teams coordinator who knows anything about kicking. It just seems like a huge gap and sort of a remnant of a sort of an old school thinking, NFL thinking. You would think that the NFL these days, where everything is so micro, everything, you know, some teams have a pass rush coach, not just an outside linebackers coach or a defensive ends coach, but a pass rush coach.
Wasn't Chris Kiffin pass rush coordinator or something like that?
Yeah, like, something like that.
Yeah, like I think he was making $1 million for that.
Exactly. But, you know, with kicking, you know, this is hindsight being 2020. But if I'm going to draft a kicker in the third round, I'm going to bring in a kind of a kicking specialist with this guy to make sure I know, you know, what's wrong and what he needs to do. And, oh, if he's still suffering from this severe high ankle sprain, maybe to tell the head coach, you know what, I think we should wait a little while before putting him back out there. But again, hindsight, 2020, but I would think, I don't think the 49ers are ever going to draft another kicker under the Kyle Shanahan regime. But if you're an NFL team out there and you happen to be listening to 49ers plus minus, I would hire a kicking specialist to go with your young kicker. It just makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I read a story. I was thinking like, oh, yeah, Brant Boyer. But yeah, as you made a point, most special teams coaches are like linebackers, right? They're safeties. They're guys who are great coverage guys. They're hustle guys. And they haven't studied kicking. They don't know exactly where the step should be. These guys have kicking specialty coaches, but it's during the offseason. They're not allowed to be working with them during the season. They're not allowed on site during the season. It makes a lot of sense, but you know Kyle Shanahan. You know John Lynch. You think they're going to ever want to hire a kicking specialist to walk around with these guys? They already
did. Yeah, they would love to do that. That's another reason for them to say, you handle this.
Yeah.
We don't want to have to think about kickers.
I don't think they want to believe that it's that important. I'll put it that way. Maybe I'm wrong, but they should have done it with Moody, and they did not do it. Or just hire an old kicker to be around. And just someone for him to talk to. Robbie Gold wouldn't be the one I would pick, but Joe Nedney, your guy. Nedney's great.
Yeah, Nedney would be good.
Jay Feely, like when he was doing the, I don't even know if he's doing broadcasting. I think he's running for Congress now or something. But when he would be on games, like I would hear more stuff about kicking from him than I ever heard from any coach at any time. Like he'd be a guy you could talk to like that. But they're not doing it. They're just going to bring guys in who they think, but correct, when they're deciding what to do with Jake Moody, that's when you really like, is this worth keeping or not? Like, that's the conversation that I don't know that they have enough information to really judge on because they just don't know kicking. So, yeah. But all good. Or they could just listen to me. I decided that one a little while ago on Moody. So they decided not to listen to me. So, you know, see.
They could have another Graham Gano situation on their hands.
We did check that out, right? After me laughing about it, Kyle Shanahan was sort of right on that Graham Gano was a kicker for Washington, and he wanted him cut, and then another time, and then he wanted him cut, and his dad said, oh, no, he's going to be a pro bowler, and he admitted that that's part of the thinking that went into with Moody. You hold on to him because he's going to be a pro bowler, and he said, and then you looked it up. He said it's probably Graham Gano, and I laughed that off. And yet, Matt Barrows,
it was Graham Gano, but he didn't make the Pro Bowl until 2017. It was 6 years after all of this happened. So, in describing this mystery kicker, kind of took little pieces and kind of melded them together. But I guess technically he was accurate with it.
He was a Pro Bowl replacement, by the way. He had a good year for Carolina, like 29-30. But I think that was a year Zuerlein was just incredible. And Zuerlein made it, but then wasn't in the game or whatever they were having for the Pro Bowl back then. But, of course, as I said, you're basing it on something the guy's going to be good at in 5 years. Who's going to be around in 5 years? As Shanahan said, you might be dead in a ditch tomorrow. So why are you holding on a guy who might be good in 5 years? He would never do that for any other position, Barrows. Right? He would never do that for a wide receiver. This guy might be great in 5 years, but he stinks now, but we better hold on to him. That was the weird thought process that I felt all along for kickers. And maybe Pinero's going to be terrible. I was thinking, uh-oh, after he missed that extra point, the quality of him is it didn't mess him up for his other kicks. The other kicks were just perfect right down the middle. So let's talk about some other things. I thought Christian McCaffrey was very good, but his touches were way down. 31, I think we all thought 31 was really high in week one. I didn't realize it was the number one in the league. He touched the ball, got hit more than anyone else in football last week. And what was it this week? I think he carried 13 times for 55 yards, and he caught 6 passes for 52. So that's 19. That's way down from 31. I think there was a real concerted effort. You could tell in the third quarter, then Brian Robinson's getting the first carry the third quarter. Like this, I just thought it was a Christian McCaffrey preservation mode until Mac Jones loses the ball and the Saints get it back and score. And then, wait a minute, it's a one-score game. You can't screw around with it. they still got Robinson in there. I'm sure McCaffrey was a little frustrated that there were times that he was feeling good and out of the game. Excuse me, Robinson had, let me see here, 6 rushes for 20 yards, so not a ton, but I definitely think it was smart and it was concerted that they were not going to push McCaffrey again on a second week on artificial surface after he had the calf thing last week. I just don't think it's bad at all to be start thinking about it a little bit. I thought they might do the same thing for Trent, but then, of course, that's when the fumble happened and the game was on the line, and you can't pull out your left tackle at that point. But I bet you it was close on Trent. Sure felt like it was close on him. You at all surprised that they went with Trent Williams in this game?
Yeah, I was following everybody watching him before the game, and he did the workout under the scrutiny of Chris Foerster. And he's done that a few times, and the verdict has been that he didn't play. Mm-hmm. So obviously they worked it out that he would. And to be honest, I didn't notice him much in this game. I think when we go back and look at it, he's going to end up had a very good game, and maybe that's the caliber of opponent or something like that. But he played okay. I think that Dominic Pooney is playing through, you know, we're going to find out after the season. Oh, he was playing through the early part of the season with this, and this. Yeah. He was slow to get up a couple of times. Ben Bartsch left the game early. He's had injury issues all of his career. He entered this game with an elbow injury and a knee injury. Yeah, that's right. Elbow and knee, and then suffered an ankle injury. So now he's got 3. And then Connor Colby took over for him. I didn't really notice him much either after he went in, which suggests that he played pretty well, or at least that the calls were done all around him. You know, one of Christian McCaffrey's points at the end of the – or after the game was that he was asked about that 2-minute drill, actually 70-second drill, as it were, to end the first half. And he noted, you know, how hard that is in a normal circumstance. Everything has to be, you know, very precise. You know, you're not huddling, guys are coming in and off the field, et cetera. And they were out there with Kendrick Bourne, who was signed 5 days ago, with Connor Colby, who's a 7th-round rookie, with Mac Jones, who's the backup quarterback, and several others who are backing him up. Excuse me. And it was almost a flawless 2-minute drill. So, you know, that's, you know, I think that speaks to probably a really good week of practices that they had. It speaks to how many reps Mac Jones got in the preseason and in training camp. I mean, we talk about how hard the Kyle Shanahan practices are and how that could be a reason why so many of these guys get injured in the summer. The flip side of that is that they are, you know, prepared for these types of situations, and not just the starters, but they do those 2-minute ones at the end of those long practices with the 2s and the 3s, which means that for the 49ers, there were a lot of 2s and 3s on the field today, and they handled that just about as well as you could have. You know, if you're picking nits, there was a long Juwan Jennings play. He probably could have gotten out of bounds on that one, would have saved them a timeout at the end. But he also was sort of ahead of his man, and he probably thought that he had a chance to score on that one. So we'll give him a pass on it. But otherwise, you know, McCaffrey getting out of bounds, Jennings getting out of bounds, just was smart all around on those guys.
Yeah, and Mac Jones making the passes that allowed them to get out of bounds, right? Sometimes these guys are led inside and you can't get out of bounds. All's point, George Kittle is out, will be out for at least 3 more games. He's on injury reserve, so that's what got Luke Farrell in. Jake Tongas played a ton. They're playing the two tights a lot. Even Brandon Willis gets in. And Kyle Juszczyk went out with a concussion. So they did not have a fullback, so they're having to run these two tights essentially as their base because one of them is essentially replacing Juszczyk. So you're replacing a 9-time Pro Bowler in Juszczyk. I think Kittle's, 4-time Pro Bowler. You don't have Ayuk. You don't have DeMarcus Robinson. You don't have Brock Purdy. Juwan Jennings injuries was, you know, questionable going into this game. I think officially questionable. Seemed to hit himself again, maybe with an ankle injury this time. That's a lot that was on the shelf offensively. The defense, we kind of said, had to carry them. Now, they gave up some plays. They scored. They gave up more points than I thought they were going to Spencer Rattler. But Rattler made some good, nice throws. Kamara was tough for them. That turnover by Fred Warner turned out to be the most important play, I think, where Kamara's kind of getting a ball out of the backfield. He gets up by my guy, Jair Brown, like comes in, grabs him as he's falling. The ball's bobbling. He's got it against his helmet. And Fred comes in and punches it out and recovers the fumble. I didn't know at the time that they could even call it a fumble because it was incomplete or not incomplete. They announced it as challenge to complete or incomplete pass. But I guess you play it out if it's a complete pass, which it was, then the fumble counts. Then Fred Warner gets it and the recovery. That was a huge, because that was New Orleans. I'm not saying they were marching at the time, but they were moving.
Yeah.
And they could have gotten to go ahead. That could have been the score to go. They never got the score to go ahead. They had, after that, I think they had the two ones after the Morissette punts inside the 15, but those didn't really come close. That was the threatening one. And Fred Warner, being the all pro that he is, makes a play there. They weren't, you know, an incredible defensive effort against a not great New Orleans offense. But New Orleans does have Olave. They have Kamara. Rattler wasn't terrible. It was not, you know, the worst offense in the league. But the defense had to care. They had to make plays at the end. And they've done it now twice in very similar ways. Bryce Huff with a sack fumble and Nick Bosa with a sack fumble in week one. They got some playmakers. When I wrote about, I don't even know if people are going to love it or absorb it much, but I just happen to know, you know, Bryce Huff signing, I mean, a trade with the Eagles in the offseason, Matt Jones signing offseason to be a backup quarterback. Bryce Huff isn't even a starting defensive end. He's a pass rushing defensive end. I guess I should have noted that in my column, which I didn't. Luke Farrell signed as their most money invested backup tight end. Thomas Morstead, punter, who cares? The kicker was always the number one priority, the one that we're going to talk about. Without those four guys, they lose this game. You know, Morstead maybe less than the others. That's just interesting. You know, in an offseason that I criticized, many people did, we just go through the list of the frontliners they got rid of and did not replace them with frontliners. They replaced them with essentially secondliners. And these second are very specifically targeted. Backup quarterback for Brock Purdy gets hurt. Backup tight end to try to, you know, maybe take some of the load off of Kittle, although we've heard that before, or even try to be a two-way threat if Kittle is out. Bookend for Bosa. Those three things are huge things that we've talked about for a long time. In this game, and I think overall, I'll give them full credit, they hit on all three. They hit. I mean, Mac Jones is so much better than Brandon Allen. It's not even close. Probably better than Josh Dobbs. They thought Allen was better than Dobbs. We didn't really get to see one way or the other. So he's better than Josh Dobbs. Farrell's better than any backup tight end I think they've had. Tongas and Farrell is certainly the best two and three tight ends they've had. And Bryce Huff's the best opposite pass rusher they had to Bosa since D4. Like, you've hit on those three. That's pretty big, and it's helping to carry them through this really rough patch. Now, the rough match might continue. As I always say, you never are fully healthy. There's never going to be a time in the the future where you're fully healthy. But for this time, when they're really, really having a rough period in injuries, they're carrying them. And then maybe when DeMarcus Robinson is back, you don't need as much of these guys. When Kittle is back, when Ayuk is back. But right now, they needed to win these two games, Barrows. They really needed to win this one if they're going to play Trent Williams for it, if they're going to, you know, expose Juwan Jennings for it. And they win it because they have those guys. And I will give Kyle Shanahan and his coaching staff full credit for getting these guys in. It didn't look different, Barrows. It really didn't look that different with Mac Jones at quarterback and Luke Farrell.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tight end and all the others down the line. And I'll give John Lynch and his personnel staff credit for finding these guys very specifically. You're not out negotiating anybody. You're not paying more money than anybody. These three, you had to go just target exactly. They gave up a fifth round pick for Bryce Huff. I think they'd do that again. Just really important singular moves. They didn't get you with the numbers of guys, but these three guys were the right guys for them to get.
Well, first of all, your Garrett Celek disrespect is outrageous.
It's outrageous. I'm known for that.
But yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I call it the 49ers underclass. Like, this is a team that's got a lot of stars still, even without Deebo Samuel, even without Dre Greenlaw. You know, they have an upper class that is as good as any teams in the NFL. The question going into this season was whether the underclass was good enough to, you know, win games like this one. And I would, you know, I'd throw the rookies into that underclass, with Michael Williams having a big game. I think that I know that the Saints scored on a throw to their tight end against Marquise Siegel, but I think he still had a very strong game in this one. You know, they're getting that, and they're getting it early, which is, I think, a bonus. Like I said, I think that this team thinks, okay, if we can just kind of hang around for the first half of the season, we can take advantage of the second half. These guys are going to be more experienced. We're going to have more home games. We're going to have more of our stars back in the second half of the season. And this is all gravy right now. I mean, you go into those games thinking you've got a good chance to win them. But I bet they thought, okay, 1-1, we'd be okay after 2 weeks, and maybe 2-2 after 4 weeks. Although they've got that Jaguars juggernaut coming in after the Cardinals in 2 weeks. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I totally agree. All those guys stepped up. I think it's really interesting that, you know, here you've got Mac Jones playing his first ever game for the 49ers on a beat up team, but he's throwing to Luke Farrell, who he threw to in Jacksonville, and he's throwing to Kendrick Bourne, who he threw to in New England. So some of these misfortunate events have kind of worked out in a bizarre way for the 49ers. He's got better connections with some of these backups than perhaps he does the starters.
I just think that let's see what happens next week. It's a big one. Division game, Arizona at home. We don't know who's playing, and Shanahan was not committal about Purdy as he should be. He doesn't know. I would think it's probable that he does not play. As you said, they're 2-0. You can play it out a little bit. Why risk it?
And as you said, Mac Jones looked a lot like Purdy. So yeah. why push it when
they still may might lose? They might
you
lose.
Got his clone in
Arizona. Arizona's better than New Orleans. I'm not quite sure how you balance that out. But I would think that they probably play a little cautious with Purdy there. His toe, we'll see. So let's say they win that one with Mac Jones and no Kittle and no Ayuk and no Robinson and all the others, maybe no Juszczyk. I just think if they get to 11 wins at the end of the year, you're going to look at these three games and go, man, that was why they're here, because they're going to lose some other games. They're not a great team. Maybe they can get there eventually. They're not great. Unless those rookies become great, they're not going to be a great team. And maybe Michael Williams could be. He did look really good today. But Upton Stout's got to get better. We'll see with all the other guys. But just like when it crashed last year, it crashed because they did not get those wins early. And they weren't 5-2 when they should have been 5-2. They were 4-5. And so when you crash a 4-5, you're done. When you crash a 5-2 or 6-3 or whatever this team is going to end up at, you lose a couple. The season's not over. You're still in it. And I think we'll look back on these games and let's say that, you know, I'm counting Arizona if they do get it as part of this discussion. That's how you get to 11, even when you're not at the top of the league. You're not the Eagles. You're not, you know, one of Green Bay. You're not one of those teams. Freaking Rams do it a lot, right? They're not great. But they do it. And the Rams are 2-0, by the way. Again, the NFC West is really benefiting from playing the NFC South and AFC South. These teams are cleaning up. By the way, the NFC West, Barros, undefeated against all other divisions. The only loss is the 49ers beating Seattle. But I'm trying to look at any tough teams they played. That does not exist and may not exist for a little while. But you take advantage of it. You got to win the games. Winning is better than losing. What, are you supposed to lose them? No, win them. And maybe when we look back on this season, the 49ers are the second wild card. And you go, man, they're not great, but they're the second wild card. It will be for these games that got them there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they'll be better at that point than they are now. I mean, you never know with injuries and who else will get injured and whatnot. But I totally agree. I think this is really, I mean, obviously, it's the best case scenario that they could have hoped for under the circumstances. Getting a lot of young guys and newcomers, a lot of minutes, and they're still winning these games. So that should bode well for the end of the season. Let's talk about wide receiver. Jordan Watkins was inactive again for this game. I don't know how long he's going to continue to be inactive. Marquez Valdez-Scantling was targeted once. Probably Mac Jones's worst throw of the game.
Or MVS ran the wrong route.
So, one more game for DeMarcus Robinson to sit out. Then he'll be back for week 4, that big, big Jaguars game. So he's back. Who's the first odd man out? I mean, I think we've already found the first
Gage.
It was Russell Gage, who's on the practice squad and who wasn't elevated today. But gee, I got to think that if MVS doesn't start doing something, because Sky Moore at least returns punts for you.
Yeah, it's got to be MVS. It's got to be. Yeah. I mean, because Kendrick Bourne walks right into the third receiver role ahead of all those guys. It just tells you what they're thinking. I have no idea who made the mistake on the throw to MVS, but my suspicion is that's why he's not playing very much, is because there's some issues there. I would think it's MVS. I would think he's in a very similar situation to Russell Gage, who got bounced. And it could be MVS, because you're going to play Kendrick Bourne over them. Then who are they going to play over? Because it's not. And then if you're going to have Watkins back, or obviously you're going to have Robinson back, who? Where are these guys?
You're going to have Ayuk back. Yeah. Ayuk, so yeah,
when is MVS ever going to play? So I would say that it's not just MVS; it's another one or two. So you know, if the 49ers had someone else who could return punts, then I would say Sky Moore, because he just doesn't play on, you know.
Well, Watkins does return punts. Yeah.
Would they want to return an injured rookie back there?
They did it last year with Cowing.
Cowing can come back. But that's another spot that would, you know, that they've got some roster issues there. But again, guys could get hurt. You never know. And you don't know when Ayuk is coming back. But yeah, I think the earliest comeback is probably Robinson, because I don't think Watkins, maybe next week, but I would not think that to play. Robinson is the one who's coming back to play, and that would be MVS. And then you have to make some other decisions there. By the way, you did say I was being ridiculous saying Nick Bosa is going to get 2 sacks today. He got one. You can ridicule me half, but I thought he might get one at the end, but it was Huff that closed it off in the end.
When he got that at first, I thought it was Bosa, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to hear the end of this from Tim.
Calling 2 sacks, my God. He got one. A lot of attention on Bosa. That's part of the deal. You're a great player, you're going to get a lot of attention. That should free up other guys to get some heat on the quarterback. Huff did in that one. And maybe that happens more often, and maybe that frees Bosa up not to get he there. If you watch where he is, and there's always like 3 blockers in the air, they're not all blocking him, but they're all aware of him. But that's what happens when you're great. So and he is great. So I was close enough. At least he got one. 0 would have been embarrassing for me, Barros. 1 is not embarrassing. He's got 2 sacks in 2 games. We all know that it's tough to get one every game, but He's on a pretty decent pace. I think he's playing great. I think he's playing the run fantastically.
Yeah.
And, you know, and 54, you know, 54 and 97 are the guys who are at Santa Bears. They're both playing great. Wavsy Warner with the turnover today and other plays. There's just certain stuff you can't do against a 49er defense. Like that was like when it was Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman, there were like certain things you just couldn't do against them. And they had Justin Smith and all the other guys, but just that kind of speed, that kind of side to side mobility. And now you throw D Winners into it. There's just certain things you're not going to be able to do against this 49er defense. And that really is a great baseline for a team. And we'll see if Mykel Williams can join that. And we'll see if Alfred Collins can join that. We'll see who else is at that level. But those two guys are at the peaks, Barrett. Like they are at their athletic primes. And that was part of the reason, I'll say one more time, I wasn't sure, I didn't understand getting rid of all these middle-level players. We'll see if they've replaced them well. You still need more numbers than that they've got, but maybe the young players take that spot. It's like, you've got these guys, you don't know how many great years all these guys are going to have left. Maybe many more, maybe not. Trent, for sure, it's a real limited number. Juszczyk, it's a real limited number. I think you kind of want to take advantage of it. Maybe they will. I'm going to certainly give credit to them for finding the players that they did. You could have got more, and if you had more, you might be better. But they're 2-0. I'm not going to rip them. So, anything else you got here, Barros?
Well, only that I just wonder about the middle of the defensive line. I thought that the Saints were testing it early, that Kamara had some, you know, 5, 6, 8 yard runs between the tackles. If I'm a offensive coordinator, that's where I would attack the 49ers instead of on the edges. And they've got James Conner coming up, who did a number on them last year, one of the bigger, stronger guys at that position. So that will be, I think, a good litmus test for where things stand with, you know, Jordan Elliott. You know, Khalil Davis had another nice tackle behind the line of scrimmage today. He's showing really good speed, things like that. I just don't know. I mean, I think the Saints obviously got away from that plan of attack when they fell behind. And that's part of the 49ers, you know, MO. I mean, that happens a lot, and that leads to a lot of wins for them. Teams can't methodically run the ball up the middle against them because they need to score points. But if the 49ers don't get a lead and that's what a team decides to rest on, I think the 49ers could be in trouble in that scenario.
That's where you need Alfred Collins, C.J. West. Like, that's where it is. A little dynamic. You know, we get Jordan Elliott and Khalil Davis are solid, you know, two middling defensive tackles starting in the NFL. They're not dynamic. Although Khalil Davis is dynamic on that one play. They're hoping that Collins and CJ West are dynamic, and maybe they will be, you know, we'll see it in weeks 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all that. I think they got a chance for it. I think West really could be dynamic. He could be just a kind of a, you know, a guy you notice 99 out there. It hasn't happened very much, obviously, in the first two games, but that's how this team grows. That's how this defense grows. And I'll have one more other thing. Like, I just think the Robert Saleh is just such an addition for them, or reacquisition for them. Things just feel steadier. Again, they weren't perfect in this game, but it does feel natural that Saleh comes back and they finish off two wins with defense. And I don't remember that happened last year. Steve Wilkes' defense did it a couple times. Certainly didn't do it in the Super Bowl. No, Saleh's defense didn't do it in the Super Bowl that he was coordinator for. But it just feels like this is a put-together defense. You can just sense that Fred and Nick especially are comfortable within it. You talked about the offseason acquisitions. That might have been the, you know, I don't think anybody was missing that point. It was an incredible acquisition to get Saleh back. They jumped at it. They paid him a lot of money. And it is definitely worth it.
Yeah, this team needed closers. Shaw is a closer. Bryce Huff is a closer. And obviously Nick Bosa is a closer. And that group has risen to the occasion. I mean, they needed the Huff sack at the end, but the Bosa sack, you know, earlier than that should have been the final salvo for the defense. The offense should have, you know, gotten a couple of first downs and salted away the game. So, yeah, I mean, these guys are delivering in crunch time, which is what the team last year just could not do, could not win these close games, could not win games in which, you know, the special teams or something else, you know, allowed the opponent back into the game. You know, that's been the opposite in weeks one and two. So they have remedied some of the issues that killed them last year.
They're not going 6-11, Barros. I don't know what else they're going to do from that, but they're not going 6-11. So,
maybe they can bring Evan Anderson up off the practice squad to stop James Conner on Sunday. I'm thinking that might be a good
one. Man can do it. If any one man can do it, it's Evan Anderson who can do it. All right, we've gone 46 minutes. That's way too long.
Too far, too long.
2-0 gets us going to 46 minutes. Maybe a loss will get us to 60 minutes. Who knows? All right, and that's barely talking about the kicker at all. Jeez, here we go.
We don't have that low-hanging fruit anymore.
All right, everybody, we'll get you back later this week. Maybe no emergency episodes this week, but I can never forget. All right, everybody, that's the show for today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.